Welcome to the world of Aeora, a news and lore podcast about the Pillars of Eternity games, as well as Obsidian Entertainment's upcoming release, Avowed. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the world of Aeora. I'm your host Eric, aka Gingerino. Thanks everyone for joining me as we dive into another episode looking at the history, game mechanics, and lore from Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2, gearing up for the release of Avowed. For those new to the show, welcome to the show, happy to have you here. You might be wondering why we pair those games together. It's because they share the same fantasy setting called Aeora. And so as the theory goes, if we dive into those first two Pillars of Eternity games and understand them a little bit more in the world that they're played in, we'll be able to have a higher appreciation for Avowed and the nuance and the writing and Easter eggs, things like that. Or if you're just into Pillars of Eternity, this is a great place to learn more about the lore of a world you love and just geek out about it. If you are new to the show, I will signpost you over to episode 80, I believe, or possibly 81, when I was talking about the developer directs from Xbox. And in those episodes, I just kind of signpost you to other places that are more important in the sense that they're more foundational lore. So if you're new to the show, that might be a place to start. Otherwise, welcome to today's show. Today's show will be just as friendly to newcomers. In this week's episode, we're going to be talking about a place within the second Pillars of Eternity game, the Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire game, called the Great Reef, which, as far as I can find, there's only mentions of during the game. But if you want a lot of lore about the Great Reef, you actually have to read it in the Pillars of Eternity 2 guidebook. Now, you can get a hard copy of this on Amazon, or I guess you could also get a PDF version on there as well. If you own, I think, the like Obsidian Edition or Definitive Edition of the second Pillars game, you also will have this in your PC game files, which is where I'm going to be reading all this information from. The entry for the Great Reef in the Pillars of Eternity 2 guidebook is alongside Mogren's Teeth, which is a series of volcanoes on one stretch of islands within the Deadfire Archipelago, and Andra's Mortar, which is also a large oceanic storm that barely any ship ever created can sail through within this world. So this is one of the greater features of the Deadfire Archipelago. For those new to the world, the Deadfire Archipelago is the setting for the second game. It's, as it sounds, it's a archipelago of islands. It stretches from around the equator all the way down to the southern hemisphere of this world, and it's just called the Deadfire. Really interesting place to set a game. Very interesting lore and stories and factions and NPCs. Highly recommend checking it out. It's the newest addition to the game as well. There's supposed to be a couple characters from that game that are going to be showing up in Avowed. So if you want to play through Pillars of Eternity 2 and try to figure out who might be showing up in the game of Avowed, all power to you. But anyways, so we're going to be reading through this. I'm not going to read it through verbatim because, I like to add my own flair to it. But we will be going through this and talking about the lore that we see. And so since there's no news to really go over, let's just jump straight into the lore.
I'm curious, what exactly did you find there?
So the Great Reef is a massive, well, reef, if you know what a reef is, naturally occurring reef within the Deadfire Archipelago. It says here that south of the Valian colony known as Port Maje and stretching north of the Huana city of Nekataka lies the Great Reef. Now, for those who are unaware of the map of this world, Port Maje town that they're talking about, which is actually the first major settlement that you run into within the Pillars of Eternity game, is already south of Nekataka, if I remember correctly, and so this signifies just how big this Great Reef is. It is huge. It spans a massive area of the globe itself. The Great Reef itself is a dense accumulation of coral, considered to be one of the oldest and largest naturally occurring structures in all of Aeora. Kith people, Kith are the main civilizations and people and races that live in this world, so that's elves, dwarves, humans, Amauans, and Orlans. You've heard me talk about these unique fantasy races before, if you've listened to this show, or play the Pillars games. The Kith have long suspected the presence and breadth of the reef from telltale signs in clearer waters, as well as flourishing ecosystems of fish and wilder creatures that call the reef home. So that was read verbatim out of this book, but it's basically just talking about the fact that this thing is huge, which you can gather if you understand where Port Maje and Nekataka is. And so when you have something that's that big and that old, it would be very ancient. There is also a lot of interesting things surrounding it. There can be sources of treasure, there could be lost civilizations or objects that are down there, and so it catches the attention of a lot of people. Now, you think that just looking at a map on its own and seeing just how big the reef is would make you have an understanding that, okay, this thing is massive. But it reads further on in this guidebook that the enormousness of the Great Reef was not fully appreciated until Valian pearl divers sought to plumb the stretches of the ocean floor with the aid of diving bells. So it wasn't until they actually tried to accomplish something and a significant incident occurred where people actually started to recognize, wait, this thing is way bigger than we thought it was. I don't think that they're talking about just the horizontal distance, you know, from south of Port Maje to north of Nekataka. They're also probably talking about the depth of this Great Reef and what's inside of it. One of the things that caught the people's attentions, especially the Valian people who are from the Valian Republics, they're basically just in the Deadfire Archipelago to try to make as much money as they possibly can. One of the things that really caught their attention, besides diving for pearls, of course, are the abundance of Azata snails. Now, Azata snails on their own aren't really, you know, fantastic by any means. They're cool snails that live on the bottom of this ocean, but their shells are basically a form of local currency to the Huana people. So they can trade this for other things, which can actually have some sort of value to them, the Valians, right? The Valians, obviously, they don't find the snails themselves particularly valuable, but, you know, if you can go to a local Huana tribe, the people who are living natively in this area, trade a whole bunch of these snail shells for, you know, something else, like, say, a boat, you now have a boat as an asset, right? So that's money on your side. You could keep the boat for purposes of your company's mission. You could sell the boat back to someone else for actual gold, which they find valuable. You understand? So, like, getting these snail shells is, you know, going to be a valuable endeavor to some of the Valian Republic's people. And it says here that clustered on the sea floor, protected by the canopy of the squirm, millions of Azata snails. The Valians have a vested interest in trying to get as much of this as they can. However, it's not as easy as just reaching for these valuable gastropods, as it says here, by reaching through the coral itself, because that would be very easy. But there are a lot of predatory eel species in the waters. And so in order to even harvest these snails, you have to be on the lookout for these predatory creatures. Now, you being a Valian person, which is very likely a human, not that it matters too much, you're not very adept at protecting yourself from predatory creatures underwater, right? Like, they will have a significant advantage. So being able to do this safely is not something that's easy. So, you know, of course, it can't just be easy, right? You can't just have this endless source of money be something that's within arm's reach all the time. Now, I don't know what you're picturing when you're picturing these eels. They don't give a description of what they look like. They do say here that most eels grow no larger than a finger's length, so not very long, but others have been known to span several yards, and a bite can easily cut across a torso or consume an entire orlin, which is one of the smaller of the kith creatures. So they can get pretty sizable and pose a significant threat as well, I suppose, if they're also in a swarm. Then even if they're only finger length, that is still pretty significant of a threat if there's a lot of them, right? So this is something they got to be careful of. But the Valians are a hardy people. They find ways to get the money, so that's what they're going to do. Despite this fact that those eels are there, this is not really a place that is habited by sea monsters. There are such things as sea monsters within the Deadfire Archipelago. You hear stories of them quite a lot. You don't, like, interact with a ton of them in Deadfire Archipelago. Like, you're not just constantly bombarded by krakens popping out of the ground or something like that. But sea monsters do exist, and you can get in quite a big tangle with them. But it is pretty well known that sea monsters don't hang around the Great Reef. So the Great Reef is actually a pretty excellent way of traveling safely. That being said, it's a good way of going from point A to point B safely. You do not want to stop your ship and then go diving for, you know, as I mentioned, the aforementioned, you want to get the snails, but there are these predatory eels and other creatures around. So it's safe to travel along, but maybe not necessarily safe to explore on its own. Now, while all that's kind of interesting enough about the Great Reef itself, there's a little bit more that's going on beneath the depths of this thing. In 2752 AI, which is the calendar designation for this game world, the first Pillars of Eternity game takes place in 2823, right? So that's just shy of 100 years in the past that I'm talking about now. In 2752 AI, there was an incident at Snail Burrow. At least that's what this section of the book is calling it. A team of Valian divers spotted a glittering source of color in the depths of the Great Reef. They discovered a circular burrow in the coral, which to this point lay hidden in the obscurity of a kelp forest. Basically goes on to say that at one particular point in the day, at one particular point in the sea, you can recognize this colorful glinting underneath the water, and otherwise you wouldn't see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So it just happens to be dumb luck that these team of Valian divers even spotted this glittering source. And of course, being there to dive and look for things, they get curious and they think, well, I wonder what it could be. And so they actually choose to dive there. They chose two of their best divers, known for their lung capacity, so I guess people are just holding their breath this whole time. Seems a little bit crazy, but whatever. But they chose the two best divers, lowered them as close to the entrance of this burrow as the diving bell could let them, and they connected to each other by a rope. So these two divers are now under the water, connected by a rope to each other. And they enter into this burrow, where they saw the colorful glittering. Now, when they actually entered into the burrow itself, first off, it took them no time to figure out what it was that was there. It was millions of azada shells. They were just empty, right? So all this source of money that I've been talking about before was littered throughout the area. But they also found themselves in this huge chamber. Like, when I say huge chamber, I mean that, like, in all directions that they looked, it just kept on going. So they don't really know just how big it was. They couldn't actually see the entire thing. So they started, you know, scooping up as much of these azada shells as they could. Like, here they have what they described as millions of shells right before them. There's no predatory eels or whatnot around, so you're already there. Just take what you can, right? So that's what they start doing. At one point, one of the divers are like, okay, you know, we've been under the water long enough. We want to get back up safely, so do what you're supposed to do. He tugged on his rope to try to get signal to the other person, like, hey, it's time to get going. But to his surprise, the rope was completely slack, and when he looked over at it, the end of it was frayed. And when this diver looked over in the direction where his fellow diver was supposed to be, what he saw instead was another azada shell, but this time the size of a capsized ship, so this huge shell. It's described as having a bony surface covered in whorls of hypnotic color, and the last thing he sees was his partner's limp body being dragged into the depths by this thing. This diver freaks out, has a panic, drops all the shells, and just starts beelining for the surface, telling people the story. So he relays the story to people up on the surface of, like, we went down there, we found all these shells, we started grabbing them. I tried to signal the guy, but this thing had snapped the rope and was dragging him into the depths. And when he tells people this, they decide, okay. Well, we should send one more expedition to find out what goes on. So they sent three divers down and see what happens. They did eventually reemerge, these three divers, but they never spoke of what they saw. They just unanimously declared that the king below, and that's in quotes here in the book, the king below should be left alone at all costs. So they kept the location of this burrow secret. It's never been disclosed. A lot of Valians have tried to find it, but they haven't. And this has led to a practice within the Valian sailorhood, or whatever you call that kind of a brotherhood, that you will pray for Andra for a safe and uninterrupted journey. And it also led to this kind of superstitious thing amongst sailors, which I've seen in other media be portrayed as pretty normal, that the sailor types can be fairly superstitious and all that kind of a thing. I don't know if that's true nowadays. I'm not a seafaring person. If anyone else is, maybe let me know. But it became common for Valian sailors to drop two azada shells into the sea, one for the people who have been lost at sea, and one for the mercy of the king below. And that's all the lore we have for that little section there. Well, don't worry, we have more to talk about in general, but just for that one thing at the snail's burrow, that incident. Basically, these Valian sea divers discovered a giant, I'm guessing, azada snail underneath the ocean. And when these people interacted with it, they somehow were able to come up back to the surface and describe it as the king below. Does that mean that it was able to communicate with them? Or is that just the name that they gave it in their kind of Valian custom? I don't really know. But somewhere beneath the surface of this great reef lies a massive azada snail, potentially, or something within the giant shell of one. Perhaps it's a huge hermit crab. And I guess it means business. Enough to freak people out. So I don't know, I'd be more interested in seeing more about that. I do remember one side quest in Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire where you're going beneath the ocean and you are dealing with more of sea monster types, but I don't recall seeing anything like this. Perhaps my mind's just a little bit fuzzy. There's always so much about the Deadfire game that I think I remember, but I'm not 100% sure, and I was like, I should go back and play it. And then I remember that to really explore that game fully is 200 hours. And I'm having a hard time getting through 10-hour games nowadays, so I guess it'll be looking up YouTube videos for me. That's the story about the incident at Snail's Burrow. Hopefully we'll see a little bit more of things like that in Avowed. Obviously we won't see anything that exact because we're not in the Deadfire. However, we are going to be at the edge of the ocean in Avowed. At least we've seen that. So perhaps there'll be some sea exploration, just a little bit of it. Who knows? Don't actually know if that's going to be a feature of it or not. Either way, exploring the living lands in Avowed will be just as exciting. This next section is called Ngati's Temple. Now, the name Ngati, if you haven't played Pillars of Eternity 2, will not sound familiar for you. But there's a god within this world called Andra. She is the goddess of the ocean, the moon, and forgetfulness, as well as grief, I believe. And the Huana peoples that I mentioned before, the native tribes living within the Deadfire Archipelago, their native name for Andra, as we know her as player characters in the game, is Ngati. So same god, different name. Or at least that's how we're led to understand it as a player character. So here's the story with Ngati's Temple. Again, we're talking about Valian Trading Company sailors. They are following a bright vein of luminous Andra, which, if you want to hear more about that, I do an episode on Andra, very important to this world. The really, really short version is that Andra can house soul energy in this world, which is a very real thing, and luminous Andra is just way more brighter and way more potent. It can house more souls, so it's just better for that kind of thing. Very valuable in this world. The Valian Trading Company, which, you know, is a company that's trying to make lots of money, they are following a bright vein of this stuff, you know, presumably so that they can find a deposit of it that they can mine and then use. They've been following one, and they don't want to mine it underwater, right? Because it's a risk of losing equipment or manpower. That said, it doesn't mean that some of the more curious sailors might not stop and take a closer look. Now, this is 2 years after the incident at Snail Burrow, all right? So they may be a little bit more precocious or a little bit more careful in what they're doing. But when they were surveying this luminous Andra vein that was under the water, they discovered a few things. One, that this luminous Andra was present across much of the Great Reef to the point where some of the oldest core grows rooted and sprang up from the surface of this mineral itself. So there's something about the Great Reef and the luminous Andra that is tied together. And that's important for the lore of this world because magic in this world, anything of the arcane, anything of the supernatural or the paranormal, however you want to describe it, has to do with the manipulation of soul energy. And Andra houses soul energy with inside of it. So if we have this Great Reef that is growing in tandem with this luminous Andra, that means there's a potentially magic that's being infused into the Great Reef. It doesn't say outright here that that's what's going on, but there is the chance for something like that to happen. So there's some very real and interesting ideas that can be made there. But the second thing that they discovered for this particular incident was a stone ruin that had collapsed beneath the waves a millennia ago, right? So it was just sort of lost under this Great Reef, and they've discovered this. Among the pillars and slabs, they found an engraved idol sitting on an altar, and they took this Andra idol with them. It looked like a woman with the head of an anglerfish, which for those who have played the Pillars of Eternity 2 game know that that very, very much gives a description of the distinction of what Andra looks like when depicted in a more mortal or mundane form. So this would theoretically be a statuette dedicated to the goddess Andra, or Ngati as the locals call her. Now, when these people got back on their boat, they had a navigator that they had hired from one of the local villages, recognized it immediately, and told them that they should probably put it back and pray for forgiveness already, explaining that Ngati is a trickster goddess and this is not going to go well kind of a thing. You know, you do your service to the goddess on land, not at sea, because when you're at sea, bad things tend to happen, but when you're on land, maybe good things tend to happen. And they kind of dismissed this as superstition, which is kind of funny considering that they became superstitious themselves with the Azada shells having to put them overboard. But yeah, they basically just look at this guy and say, you're just being one of the silly locals who don't understand how real world works, which, you know, I think a lot of people might logically think of as true. However, unfortunately, since they did not heed this advice, a lot of things did end up actually happening to him. And it all happened around the Great Reef, which again might be tied to the fact that the Great Reef is close to Luminous Andra and the gods and soul energy are very tied together. So perhaps as long as they're close to the Great Reef, these bad things were happening. But whatever, and either way, we don't really know. We're just kind of speculating here. Here are some things that went on. First off, fish were starting to keep their distance from the boat, which means they couldn't replenish their food supply as easy. So people were suffering then. They're going to be more malnourished. Next, all the journals and records of their findings that they had, which is what they were here to do. They were charting the area. They were following this vein of luminous Andra. All of those records took an accidental tumble into the sea. So all their work basically was for nothing. And then foul weather tossed them off course, and they don't have the records of where they were, so perhaps they're starting to get a little bit lost. And by the time they even regained their bearings, all of them had contracted a disease known as Mariner's Bowel. The only person left on the ship by the time all these things had happened to him was the navigator, the person who was the local Huana tribesman that was helping him figure out where they were. He steered the ship all the way back to the site of where they stole the idol in the first place, which was a spot his tribe originally had long avoided. And so he dumped the idol overboard and whispered a plea or a prayer to the goddess, obviously to like spare them from what was going on. He was starving at the time, piloted the ship back to safety, but most of the crew had already kind of died in their bunks. So this Mariner's Bowel, whatever it was very serious. I mean, you don't have any medicine out at sea, right? So you're just kind of at the mercy of whatever you have contracted. Now, this story, unfortunately, does take kind of a sad turn after that. The colonial governor saw this situation when they came back to land of, here we have a crew of my Valian sailors. They are all pretty much dead, or most of them are. And we have this one dude who is not sick, this local Huana tribesperson, and he didn't like what they were doing in the first place. They kind of come to a hasty conclusion that this guy poisoned them or something, right? So he was actually ended up imprisoned, thrown in jail, and he ended up seeing judgment in a Valian court. This has led to relationships with the Huana people and the Valians to be a little more tensed up. As a result, they don't really accept Valian coin as much anymore. But yeah, that's everything for the Great Reef today. I was originally reading this a couple weeks ago, as I like to do, reading through this guidebook, finding what lore I can, and I considered making an episode of it, and I didn't really think much of it, because it's, you know, there's not a ton of stuff here to look at, although a lot of it is pretty interesting when you start to speculate, until I realized when I was lurking through the fandom on the Pills of Eternity websites that there wasn't really an article for any of this stuff, which means that all of this information is found just in the guidebook and not terribly so in the game. So there's a decent chance that a lot of you listening out there might have not really heard of the Great Reef or really understood the depths, no pun intended, to which might be there. The fact that it stretches such a huge area, making it very big, but also very ancient. And as we know in this world, anything that's very ancient has a lot of lore to it. As well, the discovery of this entity called the King Below is, first off, very interesting, especially if you're going to play a tabletop game. That's something that you could bring into it. But it also makes me wonder, like, what was this thing and what was its relationship and what did it do with these people? Is there colony underground under the vast depths of the ocean? Is there a whole society under there of people or things? We don't know. And then the idea as well that the Great Reef is also following alongside the luminous Audra veins underneath the water of these oceans gives this idea that the Great Reef might also be suffused with soul essence and soul energy. So who knows? There could actually be souls of people kind of infused into this Great Reef itself. Who knows how tied to the actual planet this Great Reef is and what sort of impact it has on the natural world on even a global scale, right? There are oceanic systems in our own Earth world that actually have global impacts and things like that. I'm not sure of how the science works, but I remember hearing of things like that, of these massive systems under the ocean in one part of the world that impacts the rest of the ocean, which obviously impacts the rest of the way the world is. I don't know what those things are, but the potential is there, right? And so when you start to take all this together, it actually gives a lot of really good, I call it brain food, I suppose, for inspiration, thinking about this stuff, speculating about it. Will we see any of this related in Avowed? My guess is probably not, but I guess this is a good time to ask that question of what would this do in Avowed?
Is an oath worth the weight of a crown?
Now, the Great Reef being so far away from the living lands in this world's geography, I don't think the Great Reef is going to tie into Avowed necessarily. There is the small chance, like I said, that the writers at Obsidian could say that the Great Reef is such a large natural structure that has such a deep impact on the ocean in that area of the world that perhaps it does affect something in the living lands, maybe a weather system, I don't know. I don't think that's going to be the case, not because I think that the writers of Obsidian wouldn't take that into account or be able to do that, but I think it's just so far away, narratively speaking, that it's just unnecessary to include it. But who knows, right? So there could be the chance. But I don't think the Great Reef is going to necessarily make an appearance in the living lands, and therefore in Avowed. Now, that being said, because we do have the port city that we've seen in the trailers for Avowed, there is going to be a little bit of sea exploration, I hope, within the game. If not, there, you know, I'm not going to be disappointed about that. If the main focus is on the land of the living lands, that totally makes sense. That actually Now that I think about it, makes more sense than anything else, but who knows? There could be something underneath the surface over by the Living Lands, or at least the sea there, that could be relatable, could be similar in some way. Will it be a great reef? I don't know. I don't think that the oceans in that area have the same, I don't want to use the word climate, but whatever. You know, you know what I'm getting at. So perhaps, I don't know if a reef would necessarily grow in that area, but we might see some similar stories. The King Below, I don't think is going to make his way over there, but again, it's more impossible, or there could be another creature just like it. Either way, though, what it makes me excited for is this idea of this kind of mystery that we find within the Deadfire Archipelago, and therefore we could see within the Living Lands in the Game of Avowed. Because all this stuff being written at Obsidian, like, it really gets you thinking about the actual world that these games are set in and how it interacts with the other narratives we see and how the metaphysics and the internal logics of these worlds fit together. And it makes me excited to go explore an area like the Living Lands, which is vastly unexplored and ripe with mystery and exploration for us, the player characters. So I'm excited to see what Obsidian's going to be making for the Living Lands. I'm not trying to set a precedent that they're going to have these things and we're going to see topics of X, Y, and Z covered in the Living Lands. You know, like, they can't shove every single piece of lore that could possibly exist into this one game. That wouldn't be smart nor wise or anything like that. But they are almost certainly going to be putting mysteries and secrets and things for us to discover within the Living Lands when we play this game. And I'm just excited to unravel those and figure it out and possibly tie it back to other world events and the other Pillars games. But yeah, so that's the only thing Avowed really that I can think of is that actually just hypes me up to play the game and unravel mysteries more. That's me. What about you? Does any of this spark any more interest in Avowed for you? Or are you just more interested in maybe playing Deadfire the second game? I know I am. I'm actually thinking of going back and playing it. To be honest, I have a little bit of a confession to make, and I hope nobody here will harbor it against me, perhaps. But it's been making me want to go back and play more Pillars of Eternity 2. Try to hold off judgment on me if you can. When I started this podcast, I had played Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 a few times each, right? Like, I played a lot of the games. I love it, and it was a very important game in my gaming life, blah, 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 blah. But there is one note of shame that I have, because even when I started this podcast as someone who likes the lore of this world, even though I think there are people out there who know more of it than I do, way more people than just me, I, technically speaking, never had finished at that time the DLC of Seeker Slayer Survivor. And that's not because I think it was bad. It was just very combat focused, and I really don't care about the combat. The combat is good. Like, I enjoy it. It's one of the few CRPGs where combat, like, really held me in there, and I had a lot of fun with it, but it was never my main focus. Now, since starting this podcast, I have gone back and I have played through Seeker Slayer Survivor, and I have watched some videos as well of parts that I might have missed, or, you know, like, options that I didn't take. So I understand that stuff. So I'm thinking I might go back and replay that, because this is the part where I tell you what I'm playing lately. Lately, I've just been playing Botany Manor on Xbox Game Pass. Why? Because it's a short 4-hour chill puzzle game, and that's just what I'm really into at the moment. But I definitely want to get back into a CRPG, and I love the Pillars of Eternity games. I might just return to that. Anyways, that's been me. Thanks everyone for joining me on today's episode. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or whatever, send me an email, worldofaora@gmail.com. If you want to follow on Twitter, the Twitter handle is @worldofaora. If you want to support the show, if you've been listening for a while and that's something you're interested in doing, you can do so at ko-fi.com/worldofaora. That's my Ko-fi account, ko-fi.com/worldofaora. But that's everything. Thanks everybody for joining me today as we discuss the Great Reef in the Deadfire Archipelago. Information you can only get from the Pillars of Eternity 2 guidebook, as far as I can tell anyways, other than a few mentions of it in-game. But that's going to be all for today. I hope that it sparked some imagination and creativity or inspiration your guys' way, and that it hyped you up for either the second Pillars game or to play Avowed. I know it did for me. Thanks, everyone. I've been your host, Eric, aka Gingerino, and I'll see you guys next time.